only. Honourable Member Sonobis has been nominated. Any other wonder?
Honourable
Members, there is a nomination. In absence of further nomination, Honourable Tabejan will please preside over this meeting.
Thanks, Committee Secretary. Thanks, Honourable Members. You are welcome to this meeting. And everyone should believe that it's audible. The agenda is circulated amongst all of you, Honourable Members. We are going to deal with two presentations by both Department of Labour and Department of Women in the Presidency. Is there any other item that you wanted to add on there, or do so? Do we then adopt this as our agenda for today? Honourable Julia?
Thank you, Chair. Just a procedure on seeing that we won't have any other select committee meetings on the oversight next week. Just explain to us. Thank you, Chair. The oversight next week, can you just explain to us?
So we'll add that as item 5, the preparation for the oversight week next week. Okay. Thank you very much. You are welcome, Department of Labor. We are going to give you an opportunity to brief us about your program. But before that, it will be appropriate to know who we are. And, start with myself. I'm Setamurawa Tabejane, member of the committee, acting as an acting chairperson for today. So we'll take it that way and come to the honorable members.
Good morning. My name is Esther Kwan from the Department of Labor.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Sam Rodova, Director General, Acting Department of Labor.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Rachel Marsh from the Department of Labor.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Tayini Kwabe from the Department of Labor.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Mishalokas. I'm a free state resident.
Good morning. My name is Melvin Shelley from Cape Verde.
My name is... Good morning, thank you, Chair. My name is Louis Zander from the City of Choice, Peter Marovec, KZN.
Dumelang, Kim Natevo Mugwili, Zogobu Komisakini, the member of the committee representing Economic Freedom Fighters.
Good morning. My name is Dumisani Kungi, permanent delegate from the Western Cape from the Mother Region. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Chairperson Jacques Julius from Gauteng, where we don't tolerate control.
Good morning. My name is Moses Mshanga, a member of this committee from Mpumalanga, where we can find it.
Thank you very much, and we've got the secretary, the support staff, and everybody present. You are all welcome. Without much ado, because time is not in our side, we have already lost almost 20 valuable minutes of our time. And I then invited the Department of Health to the SMD to lead us in their presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We've prepared a presentation. I'm going to give a number of slides because they actually provide background. The presentation is going to cover the background, constitutional mandate, legislative entities associated with the department and all that. But then we will skip those slides and go straight to section from 7, because I believe honorable members may will find the information around the constitution, legislative, and our department as background information that honorable member can use. So just to go through, skipping all the slides around our structure, our mandate, our legislation, our the six divisions that constitute the department, that is administration, inspection, public employment services, labor market policy, unemployment insurance fund, and compensation. I'm showing this slide, honorable members, because it is important to know that the public employment services, pre-2009, it used to be employment and skills development services. Now the skills development services was moved by proclamation from the Department of Labor to the Department of Higher Education and Training. And these are just the national outcomes. As you may know, the government has adopted the medium-term strategic framework that is based on the National Development Plan. And out of the 14 national outcomes that all departments are driving towards, we as the Department of Labor contribute to the one billion on decent employment. Secondly, we work with the Department of Higher Education and Training on a skilled and capable workforce support and inclusive growth path. The two outcomes in the main are part of the subject of today's discussion, and creating a better life, efficient, effective development, and transforming society are just others that may not be relevant for today. The work that we do in the department is done by the branches, but at the same time, we also have agencies that we fund in the department that help us to do this work, and it is within this context, the Honorable Chairperson, that the presentation will then indicate what over and above the Department of Labor is doing. The CCMA contribution, which is the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, the National Economic Development and Labor Council, Productivity South Africa, and our protected employment enterprises currently trading as sheltered employment sectors. And we also have the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Compensation Fund, which are also contributing. So the presentation will also cover those aspects. Now, briefly, just to give a context and understanding of the problem that we work with, and I'm sure this information is not new to all of you, is that we're sitting with an unemployment rate of 25.5%, which translates to about 5.1 million unemployed people. And at the same time, we're facing a number of problems in terms of our GDP. We're also having information around youth as a percentage of the 25.5% unemployed unemployment, which stands at 4.4 million, especially people ranging between 15 and 34. Now, there are a number of issues that are a problem in terms of the job that we do, especially in the placement of young people in jobs. There are a lot of jobs that are currently emerging. However, there are challenges in terms of placing some of the unemployed people in those jobs. And one of the problems, out of a number of other problems, is the mismatch between the skills they have and the requirements of a number of jobs. There are areas such as small and medium micro enterprise that is underdeveloped, where we see a lot of young people also not taking opportunities in those areas. We also face a challenge in a growing number of well-established enterprises continue to shed jobs. If you look at our UIF statistics and given the current economic unemployment, we still have that problem of continuous job shedding. Now, the next slide just gives you a sense in terms of the provincial breakdown of the extent of the problem. And we update this information on a quarterly basis, working with Statistics South Africa to get a sense in terms of the movement and the extent of the problem per province. You may have noticed that in areas such as the Free State, for instance, but by end of June, the unemployment rate stood at 401,000. And if you look at Mpumalanga, for instance, you will notice that the unemployment rate stood at 29.5%. And you can go into each province to look at the extent of the problem. We have 126 labor centers that are located in this all provinces, but over and above that, we also provide our services from 76 Tucson centers. And where we don't have Tucson centers and we don't have labor centers, we also have mobile trucks that normally goes to communities where with traditional leaders, in some instances, when we will visit their municipality halls once a week, which is not ideal, but provides services such as unemployment insurance fund, employment services, compensation fund, and to take problems related to dismissals and so on. Now, this is just a pie chart giving you a sense in terms of the breakdown of the information that we receive from SSA on the total number of unemployed people, with 53% having less than metric, only 30% with metric, and 17% with tertiary level qualification. And this just gives you a graphical representation on the problem and how it has been manifest itself over the years. Now, we are a department that is working with a range of departments in dealing with this stage of youth unemployment. We work with departments such as social development, the various youth agencies, higher education and training, which I said is amongst our key partners, trade and industry, and so on. And what we are going to present is our contribution insofar as a program that we are having that are aimed at addressing youth unemployment. And I'll give over to this one to present a consolidated summary of the various interventions. I must upfront also indicate to honorable members that if the state of the economy was
in such a way that we could bring everyone today. Would have brought even people from the agencies and so on, but we have worked with them to consolidate the information received. And where there are issues, maybe later on, that we may not have detailed information or answers to specific questions, although we do our best, we will undertake to go back and vet that agency to provide more information in the specific area if we didn't bring all of them. But we believe that the presentation will try to give you an overview of what the department and its agencies are doing in terms of its management. Okay.
Thank you, honorable members. I am going to talk to you about the services that we are rendering to unemployed people, particularly the youth, people with disabilities, and women. As public employment services, we've got the responsibility of registering unemployed people. With the legislation that we are currently putting in place, as government, we will be responsible for circulating or communicating information about unemployed people. That is why it's important for us to work with other agencies. Some of the functions that we are doing are listed here, that after we have registered the unemployed people, they are provided with employment counseling so that we can improve their employability. What happens is that in some instances, unemployed people are referred to employers, and because they have not been provided with information, they are unable to fill the position. And we are advising them on the information that is available, like, for example, the training that is offered through EPWP, DHT, and so forth. And we're also advising unemployed people with regard to accessing social security benefits. Here we're talking about UIF, EQUADA, and so forth. And also providing specialized services to people with vulnerable workers, people who are disabled, people who are women, and so forth. The other section is dealing specifically with employer services. What we have done is that we've got two main areas in public employment services. We've got services that are dedicated to work seekers and then services that are dedicated to employers. Here it is our responsibility to ensure that we market the services so that employers are registering vacancies with us. The importance of having this service is because it is not wise for us to register unemployed workers and not provide anything to them. So that is why it is important for us to establish relations with employers who will register opportunities with us, and as a result of that, workers will then be matched to those opportunities that are available. And then they are ultimately placed in those work opportunities. The other service that we are rendering together with you in support of the Department of Home Affairs is providing a service to international cross-border labor migration functions. What happens is that as and when an employer wants to import labor, Department of from abroad, then the Department of Labor is contacted, seeing that it's for the database. We have to check first as to whether the opportunities are available either or in the country, and if those opportunities are not available, not only from the database of the Department of Labor, there I'm talking about the database of the municipalities, the database of NYDA, the database of private employment agencies, that when the skill is available in the country, then we will not say to Home Affairs, go ahead, give this employer the permit to bring in, to import the labor. So that's how we are working together with them. And this links to the regulation of the private employment agencies and the temporary employment agencies, that we are partnering with them, we are regulating them, we are listing them, we need to know who are the private employment agencies that are rendering service in the country, so that we know that at the end of the day, how many people are placed by private employment agencies versus those who are placed by us as public employment services. And another service that we're providing is service to companies that are in distress, including the training layoff schemes and the social flex. During the 2009, I think we are all aware of the economic crisis, the global economic crisis that hit the country. And as South Africa, I think this, we were able to manage the challenge that we faced with regards to the difference, in the sense that companies were allowed
to not to retrench workers, and instead they were assisted in the sense that their Department of Labor through UIF and the NSF, then that 2.4 billion was set aside for the training and also for the paying of the wages of the workers during that period. Okay, I think the I'm not going to go through the breakdown, but this is just a breakdown that we have shown you as to what is it that we have done from the Department of Labor when you look at provincial breakdown, the service by difference. Okay, and these are the plans that we are planning to do. Like, for example, this year we have given us a plan plan of registering 650,000, and we are also going to provide employment counseling to 220,000. We're going to place 20,000, and we're going to register 50,000 employees. This is the bus that we have talked about earlier on, to say that when we take our services to the rural areas and to the remote areas, we are making use of the bus. This is just to show you that during some of the outreach programs that we have had, you can see most of the people that are working there are the youth. This is the registration services that we are providing for the youth and for the employers. This is inside of the bus. The bus has got two buses. They each have 12 computers, and those who are computer literate can register themselves, and those who are not are provided with assistance in the registration. Okay? The Census Employment Services also has got initiative of training and placing unemployed persons, particularly people with disabilities. We've got 12 factories. We are in the process of having two factories in where they are non-existent, in the province of Mpumalanga as well as the province of Limpopo. There is a learnership program that is currently running with the team, and learners are currently being assisted. Okay, and with regard to UIF, UIF has now changed and it's no longer reactive, it's now proactive, in the sense that the unemployed people who have already exhausted their benefits are assisted with regard to training. And as a result of that, the Minister of Labor has advertised 300 million for the training of the unemployed beneficiaries. Here we're targeting almost 8,000 beneficiaries through the Labor Activation Program, and the fund has been certified, that has been approved. And linked to that also is the availability of Productivity SA providing the turnaround solution. This turnaround solution is also assisting in the sense that instead of the company retrenching and instead of the workers growing unemployed benefit, they are assisted to remain afloat. And as a result of that, the UIF has set aside the amount that is assisting Productivity SA to ensure that those companies come up with a turnaround solution and remain in business instead of the workers being retrenched. This is just a breakdown of showing you the provinces where the assistance has been happening, where the cooperation has happened between the UIF as well as the FICA. I think you can see that Gauteng, when you look at Gauteng, you look at Limpopo, you look at KZN, you look at Northwest, you look at Western Cape. This is just to show you the breakdown as to the training interventions that took place. Another responsibility that UIF is doing is the social responsibility investment, and here 3 billion has been set aside to assist in terms of job creation, and as well as the UIF and IDC board, and out of that coordination and out of that relationship, 3.5 billion has been set aside. You can see the total number there of the jobs that has been created, over 23,000 that has been created and 21,000 that has been saved, and all in all, over 44,000 people have been assisted through the UIF. Okay, and this is the breakdown also of showing you the number of jobs that have been saved. Here you can see the big provinces, Gauteng, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KZN have benefited in this. Okay, the compensation fund is also having an initiative where they are going. They are currently employing a graduate as part of the intensive program. They set a target of 500 graduates. This applied in the MTSF from 2014 to 2019. And in addition to that, the compensation fund is currently exploring the possibility of making bursaries available for students to study medical, orthopedics, and prosthetics with a view in making this career accessible and available to the historically disadvantaged group. In addition, it will explore some forms of partnership with companies providing the orthopedic and prosthetic services to enable the graduates to gain work experience. This is one area that contributes competition fund is going to contribute in. And Productivity SA has got a business model for the SMMEs where they're looking at the startup business training, and they're looking at the course. They're also providing the business improvement workshop, the coaching and aftercare program, and incubation project. Okay, in terms of the startup business workshop, this is what they are going to focus on. This is what the course is all about. I'm not going to go down into details, but this is specifically targeting the support to MMEs. Yes, I think this is specifically beneficial to the disabled persons. Okay, they also provide the aftercare and coaching. In this phase, this program, they are assisted with practical assignments to do their own business in the form of coaching services, where they are going to look at this hybrid module that is going to assist them in terms of their goals, their reality, the options, the will, the aftercare, and they are giving feedback. Because in some instances, if aftercare is not provided, then you find that the poor SMME is not going to be able to cope on his own or her own. Okay, in terms of the coaching module, they are methodology, they are looking at the data gathering and the giving feedback, the coaching and evaluation, and this is basically looking at the only warning system that if you don't get it right from this step, then definitely it's not going to assist the SMME to proceed. Okay, they also have the youth development partnership, and here they got the youth development entrepreneurship program that is running in Gauteng, in Northwest, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Western Cape, and the Free State, particularly targeting the youth. And to date, we are seeing that in terms of the SMEs, they've got over 3,000 that have been assisted. And when you do the breakdown there, you can see that out of that, over 1,000 were the youth, and over 2,000 were females, and 22 were people with disabilities. And this is just one of the snapshots that we're taking towards the youth development program. I think what we're also trying to highlight here is to show that as government, as Department of Labor, we are aligned with other government departments in the sense that we work with extended public works, we're making referrals to work seekers, and as well as the infrastructure, strategic infrastructure projects that are happening in all 9 provinces, we are partaking, and we are seeing that there are opportunities that are going to be available. We know about the skills that are needed. That is why from our database we are able to make the relevant results. And also in terms of the intensive projects, there's a project that we are running with Department of Higher Education as well as the DTI, which is funded by DTI, where unemployed graduates are given the opportunity. This is going to run for a period of 2 years, and over 1,200 unemployed graduates are going to be assisted. So the Department of Labor is assisting with those selection and recruitment and assessment of those graduates. And in terms of Transnet, there is a project that they are currently working with them, as well as the Department of Public Works and Department of Water and Sanitation and NYDA, as well as the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. In conclusion, the Department of Labor through Public Employment Services is providing a free service. The target includes the out-of-school youth, some of whom do not have matric, some of whom are unemployed graduates, some of whom are women, and some of whom are people with disabilities. We start here to establish external partnership with private employment, private and public sector, so that we can be able to popularize our services, so that our services can also be utilized.
and our fundamental objective is to contribute to the reduction of unemployment, particularly among the youth, poverty and inequality. I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Swani. Like I said, honorable members, this gives you an overview of what the department, its entities, in the fight of the state of youth unemployment. We are also contributing to that process, and maybe in taking questions, we may be able to further clarify certain aspects. Thank you, Mr. Bishop.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Now, an opportunity for yourself to reflect on the presentation we just heard. Yourself, honorable member,
thank you, Professor. Thank you, Acting Director, for...
Just to say, can you note all the questions so that they put them, all of them?
Thank you for your presentation at the department. I have some few questions to you. As your key performance area or your responsibility, I see here that you do the inspection. And I want to know as to how do you do inspection. I will cite an example to say you go to a private entity. You check whether they comply according to the basic conditions, EE and whatever. Then after doing that, what is it that you do to make sure that the compliance is achieved? And the other aspect, I know that you give support to EPWP. I want to check with you whether you enforce the various departments to make sure that they do pay according to your basic conditions of employment. Because as I'm sitting, I know that those people are paid a very low, I don't know whether it's a wage or a salary. What is it that you are doing? Because that is practiced by the department, governmental department, and your EE. How, when you get into the departments or public entity, like your municipalities, and you find that municipality doesn't comply with the EE and the basic conditions of employment, they don't comply, what penalties are you giving to them, and when, after doing the following financial year, what is it that you do in terms of monitoring that department do the right thing? Also on learnership, how do you assist the host employer to make sure that these people that are on learnership in that specific entity got absorbed or get employment by the whole employer or any other entity? I will close for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable King.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, DG. DG, I understand Department of Labor has got a lot to do dealing with a lot of departments and companies outside there. But really, I think I don't know how to monitor your sector aside the problems in your sector. Because to me, I think it is a lot of companies in South Africa that doesn't comply with the Labor Act. For instance, I don't know how to deal with those companies who doesn't employ South Africans. People who doesn't have pay. Doesn't have ID, which is, we can call it cheap labor. Because those people doesn't want to come up and they take all the foreigners you go all over, foreigners are employed and by the company. I don't know your inspector or how do you deal with those people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, I refer to the last sentence of this presentation. Our fundamental objective is to contribute to the reduction of unemployment, particularly amongst the youth, poverty and inequality. I also refer to slide 17 of the presentation, saying that youth unemployment increased from 3 million in 2009 to the highest of 3.4 million in 2013-2014. If you look at the stats for general unemployment, 2008 it was 21.5%. Today it is 4% higher, 25.5%, the highest it's been over the last 5 years. It just keeps rising. Now, if you go back to the last slide, our fundamental objective is to contribute to the reduction of unemployment. The department is failing spectacularly in its fundamental objective. And it keeps failing even worse and worse than it has done the previous year. Now, what I would like to know is the policies and the solutions that have been included in this presentation have been going on for quite a few years, but yet we see unemployment rise ever still, which is an indication that at some stage we need to realize that perhaps not all the policies are working, or they're just not being implemented properly by the department. I would like to know from the department what it's going to do to ensure that the good policies that encourage growth and employment, that those are implemented properly, because, well, we have to agree that a few jobs have been created in the process, but unfortunately more have been lost than have been created. So the first thing is, what is the department going to do to implement the good policies to ensure that more people have jobs that are being created for them as in the past, and what is the department going to do to ensure that the job losses, which is proportionally much too high if you compare it to the jobs that are created, what is the department going to do to curb those jobs? And finally, I would also like to know that, in 2009, an election promise was made for 5 million jobs. I don't care whether they are real jobs or temporary jobs or whatever kind of jobs, but they were promised. This year we've seen that there was a similar promise of 6 million jobs. How many of those 5 million jobs in 2009 have been created if we've got a 4% higher unemployment rate over the last 5 years? And is the department then of the opinion that those jobs were actually just an election promise?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by Honourable Mr. Lucky, but I just want to say that the Department of Labour is certainly one of the most critical departments involved in the development of our people, and I think it's a very serious, serious thing. Because if you look at all the election promises by almost all political parties, they all focus on unemployment and job creation. Now, in your presentation, I can't see the failures or your successes in previous years, yet you are continuing with the same initiative. What are you changing? Can you exclude corruption from all your initiatives? Are the corrupt authorities preventing you from fulfilling your duties? Because all these initiatives should bring something about, but it hasn't. Chairperson, through you, Gigi, you mentioned that there are certain sectors that are creating jobs at this moment. Can you tell us what sectors are they? And are there any declines in other sectors that's not creating jobs or sharing jobs at this moment? And are your plans for training aligned to job opportunities that you will mention there in the first question in terms of those sectors? Are your plans aligned to those ones? Because you should be able to tell the Department of Higher Education in London, these are the sectors where we're seeing jobs are being created. Are they informed about these increases in job opportunities so that they can train people to take advantage of those job opportunities, or are we working parallel to each other? In terms of housing, the township economic development introduced by the Premier David Makura, what's your involvement in that project? Is it a provincial project? Are you involved in it? Because that is actually a labor intensive project. What's your involvement in the housing township economic development project? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mr.
Thank you, Chair. First, we must appreciate the presentation in the detail. And my question will only focus on issues of job creation. Yeah. Let me put my question like this. As we are all aware that in terms of the current political development, most of the bigger giant industries are solely in the smaller one. And as I start happening, more retrenchment take place. In the province that I am from, many smaller companies are being sold or being swallowed by bigger companies. And due to that, retrenchment takes place. Now, I want to know what our major plans the department have, because our idea is to make sure that we fight unemployment and poverty. So while this thing, meaning we are not going to see our in terms of making sure that we fight the element itself of unemployment, the question is, what is the plan of the department into managing that scenario? The other question would be that as the department works with public institutions like municipalities and kind of provincial legislation in employing, particularly on EPWP program. I think we all know that EPWP program is not a sustainable program. It's almost a short term. What measures do we have as a department? Because your department has a serious responsibility to make sure that our people are employed, they have something that they bring at home on the table. What measures do you have to make sure that after they have been trained within the PWP program, how do we then incorporate them into the mainstream of industry? The other one, I think we are all aware as government that we are encouraging cooperatives to be a model to be used in South Africa to identify element of poverty and unemployment. What plans and what program do you have in the department to make sure that cooperatives that are registered in any province are being utilized effectively? In terms of your skills development, your business, as you have mentioned that you also assist the small business in the country. The other one is that you have projects like Goodfield and Power Station, which are big projects. Maybe Power Station and Lukula Power Station. They promise that they are going to benefit, they are going to have work jobs there. But what happens after is that people living around those areas are not being employed in those projects. Now, I want to know from the department, what strategy or techniques are you putting in place to make sure that, because in terms of the RDP, in terms of the RDP policy, it says any project that takes place in a particular area, 50% of the relocation should go to that area. If I'm not 50%, 70%, it's not 30% now. Now, what measures are you going to make sure that that actually is being realized? Because that is part of our governmental policy to make sure that our people benefit. Well, you see, they happen, they end up, you see, projects are being stopped by surrounding the community saying that they're not benefiting, they're not being employed in those projects. I just want to know how to read and concentrate on the department. Yeah, I think there is this matter of beneficiation. The department has not been involved in that matter. Because government was saying to them, they must benefit, they must in terms of the benefit, the benefit is your mining and then by charter. Now, the department, how do you fill in the gap? Because if institutions are not compliant, you have the department to make sure that they comply. We have policies, we have acts that we put in place to make sure that they comply. Now the department does not know, honorable member has questioned the letter. What do they do in that regard? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've seen two more hands for second round. Honorable Mekelak is 1 minute and likewise.
No, Chairperson, I'm just complaining about the condition of this room.
I'm afraid I may not have the confidence to deal with it. I'm aware that you have given to the support itself to help it. They are unable. Who am I?
Chairperson, thank you. Thank you for putting me a chance to ask the second one. The department has spoken about small, medium, micro enterprise sector. And I think the small, medium, micro enterprise sector is relatively underdeveloped. What are you doing to develop that sector? Because there's a nice job creator right there. The other bullet point just below that is the country is also faced with a huge challenge of the ever-growing shedding of permanent or stable employment replaced by casual and unstable employment. I can tell you what my opinion is on why that massive economic problem is occurring, because your labor laws are bad. But I would like to know from the department why they think that is occurring. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Julia Salo. Do you have anything to say? Can you say you will come?
Chairperson, on a lighter note, isn't it a notice from all the questions? There are no Kotsato or SCCP questions from the ANC. And there are so many that I rest with it. Just note it.
Honorable Mr.
Thank you. Yeah, no. He is starting something else for sure. But nevertheless, Chairman, there's one question that I've forgotten. It's in my heart. Whenever I sit in any home, I will question the thing. The issue of military relations. The act has been elected by Parliament in 2011. How many members do we have as the department that are fighting to understand the challenge in terms of training and employment? Thank you
very much. I'm sure you have noted all the questions. But I would love to get, you know, into your public employment service life. I don't hear you giving a reflection of, you know, foreigners who are, you know, employed in South Africa. How do you account to, you know, them? Do you have any way of knowing how many are they right vis in South Africa? Of course, I'm also, you know, mindful of the fact that when you speak about this percentage of young people, one is again saying we do have, you know, foreigners who are young from many of Africa and Europe, you know, nationalities. It's not only African people. Many people, they often speak about Zimbabwe, Mozambique, you know, not talking about Pakistan, not talking about, you know, all the European nationalities that are in South Africa. How do you account to them? How do you give your hospital they themselves in this registration that you spoke of? But equally on your slide 21, you spoke of your performance indicators, your targets, but you are not highlighting your quarterly implementation that will make us, as you know, overseer structure to be able to track where you are in terms of your executing your own, you know, key performance area. So I thought it would be important if you do that. But I haven't heard you also speaking about the mechanism of dealing with what we have seen in at the beginning of this year. Today, suppose these strikes, they become perpetual. The mines cannot, you know, produce for 2 years. What is the plan of, you know, the department in addressing that particular area? Because it's an area that has got a bearing to all of us. Whether employed or not employed, as long as you are a citizen in this country, you will have to feel the challenge. This issue of UIF, I've heard citizens of the Republic of South Africa saying, my ex-husband, my father, who happened not to stay with me, died, and when we try to claim, you know, whatever, we are not allowed on the basis of this person does not have beneficiaries. I guess in the African context, there's nobody who doesn't have a beneficiary. What happens to that money is that you are not giving to anyone? You are saying because there's nobody registered in Africa. How do you deal with it? And, I thought it's something that we shouldn't just look at it for the sake of looking at it. But my final one is to be on the that commission, compensation commission. I don't even want to study it. I'm sure you'd know it will need a full session where you will explain what are the improvements that are there, because that commission is not, to the best of my knowledge, it's not doing what it has been established for. It's saving the people of South Africa big time. Maybe just to comment on what are the intention of, you know, restructuring and the turnaround strategy in that particular commission. Maybe let's allow you to take us through the response. Maybe I should also, on that, we don't have the likelihood of time. Try to be succinct and then squeeze yourself into the remaining 10 minutes of our time before we are, you know, bringing it into other departments. Thank you very much.
Okay, Honorable Chairperson and members, I'll try and be as quick as possible to the question. There was first set of questions around inspections, what has been done to make sure that that is a question around how do we conduct inspections in the EPWP, ensuring compliance and so on. Now, normally, just a brief background, we have 1,000 inspectors throughout the country, which in terms of ratio, if you take police ratio compared to the inspectors, we talk about 280,000, I mean somewhere around 208,000 per 1,000, which is a negligible percentage. We rely strongly on trade unions to conduct self-inspection and self-regulation. The first point is that there are very few inspectors. However, we do our level best under the circumstances to try and visit workplaces where we get complaints, where we do lead inspections, we specialized inspectors from across provinces to target specific areas where we see a rise in complaints, in non-compliance, and so on. And this is also done irrespective of the sector. We did in EPWP to check that they comply with the ministerial determination. We go to municipalities. We close down government buildings. We have been inspecting in parliamentary villages to make sure that U.S. Members of Parliament pay to the determination set by the minister. We do it across public servants, teachers, nurses, and so on to make sure that they comply. We don't go to sectors simply because this happens to be in the other areas, because we believe that we need to comply to make sure that vulnerable workers are protected. On environment equity, the municipalities are just like any other employer, government departments and so on. In terms of the Employment Equity Act, people file reports which are assessed, and where we realize or notice areas of serious non-compliance, JSE listed companies and so on, we do DG reviews. In fact, next week I'll be visiting a number of government departments, including big companies where we've noticed that they've not improved in terms of the Employment Equity Report, to make sure that they implement their plan. On learnership, I did say that they're in the department. However, where we visit companies and we find that the employers are not complying, we serve them with the notices. We alert the Department of Higher Education and the relevant seekers to make sure that they get the employer to comply, or they are removed from the register of people who are benefiting on their gun system. Obviously, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act has been amended so that we don't go through a long and tedious process of having to serve notices and then 60 days and then coming back and all that. If we serve notices and on second inspection, the companies don't comply, we can ensure that the notice becomes an order of court, and then the employer will then be forced to comply. There was a question around Department of Labor failing on the reduction of employment. Now, I think it's a broader question that confronts all of us. And we're part of the G20 processes, and we can attest to the fact that that's not a unique South African problem. In big companies, in big countries in the world, when the state of the economy goes down, the reality is that the rate of new jobs and employment is also slower, and as a result, the question of intake of people also slows down. And the opposite is also true. When the economy picks up and companies start growing, and that's why the G20 countries have been looking at that, and the rate of employment increases. Now, there are a number of factors. Unemployment is caused by a whole range of issues. Economic meltdown is one big issue, but economic growth is also a product of a number of interventions. There are issues around investment, whether the investors panic and they want to keep their money somewhere. There are issues around the kind of project infrastructure, and I think our government is doing quite a lot in terms of that. And the issue is that the more infrastructure projects we have, the more you are able to get people into those areas. The unfortunate thing is that infrastructure projects by their nature are short-term, but at the end of the project, normally the jobs get shed, and then the jobs that arrive are in a new area that is completely unrelated. So where you find an airport being expanded, the construction worker is not necessarily the same person that would be working in the administration process and so on. And I think those are some of the dynamics that we all have to face and deal with. Questions around failures and successes in the previous years. I assert, honorable members, that the nature of the invite didn't specify. However, we do have annual reports that are tabled in Parliament
that indicates how the department, including entities in the previous years, have performed, and we can do a comparison going back to say in this year this was our contribution. We also have that information around the quarters, because we are obliged to publish that information in our website, including those of entities. Whether there are corrupt activities impacting on the ability of us to grow jobs. To date, in the department, I cannot say yes, there are not, or there are, but what we do have is isolated incidences of either a number of our inspectors that were caught taking part, and where the matter is brought to our attention. We have dealt with them decisively, we have discharged them from the public service, and the same applies to our officials in the UIF, where they were either involved in syndicates that offered fraudulent UI-90. We have dealt with them, and I'm sure you may have seen also a number of doctors that are going to lose their practice licenses that were involved in fraudulent activities in the claims of compensation funds, which we have caught them, worked with the various agencies, and some of them are going to lose quite a lot. Their assets have been attached and so on, and we have caught cases that are currently ongoing in the specialized offenses court, where we are dealing with some of those syndicates. The reality, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that where you deal with money and where you deal with issues of employment, like in any other sector, you cannot rule out 100% the possibility of syndicates emerging. The question is whether you have got systems that can detect such practices in time and are able to react and deal with them quite easily. Aligning skills need with new jobs, I think we will continue to do that. The issue of skills plans is in the education. We participate in that. We are able to share with them the data in terms of jobs, especially in the last year, infrastructure, because of the big job creation interventions and services have been the major growth areas. Mining, manufacturing, and other sectors. Some remain stable, some are in the decline. And we provide that information. But I think the challenge that they also face is the extent to which you provide the core that makes people to adapt, or you provide specifics. You have your own cell phone. It's invented today, you have it today. In 6 months' time, that cell phone is changed and a new one is in place. Now, the way the schooling system works is that it develops curriculum, you train teachers, you set exams, you train people for 3 years. By the time they reach the end, that learning has already, it is no longer relevant, and I think that catch-up is not something that is unique to South Africa. I think what we have realized is that you need to provide the core that is essential, but at the same time, you need to have some amount of flexibility, and some of the learning cannot be provided in a schooling situation. It must go to the manufacturers and various specialized institutions so that you are able to move at speed. The Gauteng government initiative, yes, we are involved in the sense that most of the learners that are recruited and placed in those initiatives are sourced from our database, and this is not unique in Gauteng. I'm sure honorable members will know that we talk about a special, there are special investment development zones that are established across the country that we are part of in the airports, in the various hubs, where we are working with those governments to source learners from. The company is following small ones resulting in job losses. I think that is our daily job. It's our daily experiences. You have seen recently the opening of big malls in townships are resulting in closure of small and medium-sized companies locally. The emergence of big manufacturing plants in nearby also swallow small companies. The issue here has to do with how we work with the small and medium development enterprises, our DTIs, because in some cases they give incentive to these investors, and some are done with good intentions, but there are unintended consequences where the small and medium enterprises become casualties in the process. So the issue is, how do we strike a balance between accelerating development but at the same time empowering the small and medium-sized enterprises so that they take those opportunities. EPWP sustainability, yes, I can agree with more with you, honorable member. One of the successes that we have noticed and seen in other countries is that job creation schemes that are short-term interventions that are implemented without clear exit strategies results in a situation where you just end up recycling people, and the poverty or working poor tendencies are maintained because you don't empower those people to exit, to start their SMEs, to start cooperatives, or to be absorbed in municipalities. And we are continuing to engage EPWP to change the approach. There is a review of the EPWP that we are participating in showing them, and I think there's a realization and acceptance that when we go to EPWP 3, we need to change and make sure that we don't have people who have been working in EPWP for the last 5 years or 10, because they're not going anywhere. Plans around cooperatives, this is in DTI, however, where it comes to us has been to assist them. Remember, on the board, members, that the minute you are a cooperative, the employer-employee relationship doesn't exist. So you are the employer yourself. So when the cooperative owns a farm, and at the end of the month, people don't get an income, you can't blame an employer because you are the employer. The labor relation doesn't apply because these people are own employers. So the issue has been to empower and work with DTI to make people who are working in the net, and we're seeing where people have received land as part of the land settlement process, that sometimes some members of the cooperative believe that they are employees and they strike, and who are you striking against? Because cooperatives do not generate income. It's a collective fault. So you have to educate so that people understand that the employer-employee relationship becomes different where you have an SME or where you own your means of production. Also, let me look at investment. Yes, honorable members, the money that we collect for UINCF, 83 billion in excess and 34 billion for cooperation funds. We don't invest it in banks. In terms of the PRMA, we invest it with the Public Investment Corporation. This money is then in turn invested in big projects like Kufile, Yamilupi, the RND1, big airports such as Cape Town, the N2 widening, and so on. The national, the SANRAL and all of them borrow that money, both from the state pensions and UI funds. Now, in the investment agreement, we normally require the TIC. This is part of the timing that the people employed are either drawn from data banks and local people. Milupi has got in the region of 15,000 people at the peak of construction. It reached 17 and a half, and then as they are winding down, it's reducing. Kusile was in a region of 12,500. Now, all those people, our role there was to try and strike a balance. We know the service delivery project and all that, but these are projects that are South African. And the recruitment, if you go to Kusile, people are drawn from Kwazuka, in Malaselni, all those areas around Bloemfontein, Angala. There are something like 180 or so buses on a shift that are moving up and down those areas taking people, because people from the surrounding areas were just not sufficient to build those vacancies. So I think in small projects we do experience those problems, but in big projects I think there was an attempt in terms of the investment community to require those people to involve. Obviously we do find challenges where the people who have been subcontracted would then say there is no local skills and then they want to employ people from abroad. Beneficiation of raw materials, yes, we believe that, we can agree with you more than that. From an ounce of raw material, if there were to be added very locally, we all agree. And I think that is why the Department of Labor is part of the interministerial meeting that is advising the president on the kind of changes that can be brought in within the municipalities. Last week on Thursday, you will have seen the president hosted a session with key departments such as ours, including the mining houses, to look at Marikana and the port of Marikana, because there, apart from dealing with labor relations, we are dealing with years of neglect by mining houses around investments in terms of roads, on infrastructure, TB, HIV, that has arisen around the mining towns, neglect of infrastructure, you know, their health, education. People live from all over the world to join their partners, and in the process they have cooling systems and so on. So that there are lots of things that we are dealing with as multi-departments and so on, and beneficiation is one of them, to try and get the mining employers to, as part of their license condition, to create jobs locally. Because if you put just one bar of gold in Italy, you can imagine the number of jobs you create in China and those areas. Those countries don't have the raw materials, but they are creating jobs in those areas. And the question is, how do you change that balance? The FMME, we're doing quite a lot, but also I must indicate that with the emergence of the new department, our role has been to make sure that as much as SMEs exist, we are still in terms of understanding the need to comply to a range of laws, because that's where the bigger problem arises. Some of you may say no exempt, but we can give you examples where we are facing serious problems. Small businesses operating in the backyard, somebody using a grinder, they will break, cut the stomach out, person does. No registration and all that. You are called to investigate. Now, who takes the responsibility? The person has not been registered. Some get blind, some lose whatever. You can't compensate them because they are not registered. When you force compliance, again, you are accused of making sure that you know, there's rigidity. You make it difficult for them to do business and so on. So striking a balance between compliance and minimum that they need to understand compliance is what they're doing. Rigidity of our labor laws, I think that's the greatest thing there. And one can just refer members to the recent OECD study and the ILO study. Labor laws in South Africa compared to other countries. If you take that study, just Google on the OECD. The issue is that comparatively, despite the critics, the labor laws in South Africa have been found to be very flexible. In other countries, people don't fire and hire as people are doing in South Africa. And we've seen it in a lot of places. There are a lot of casual people in South Africa. If the law was rigid, wouldn't allow anyone to employ casual labor. Those are some of the problems we're trying to address in terms of amendments to the labor relations act. There are people who have worked all their lives, been casual workers. They are now becoming a burden to the social security system because they are leaving employment, no pension, nothing. Chairperson, you raised an issue around foreign workers that are not documented. Obviously, anyone that is not documented who goes through the fence it's very difficult to know who they are, the total number of such people. It's a challenge between ourselves and home affairs. The problems in the Lesotho border, in the Mpumalanga border, in fact, Mpumalanga border has become a bigger problem because of the inflow through the and the relaxation of laws in Mozambique. The majority of the people, Pakistani and so on, that are arriving in the country are coming through that channel. And we have had sessions, SADC ministers of labor and employment, including the ministers of home affairs, both in South Africa, Mozambique, and all the time to address that problem. However, the problem, unfortunately, is in receiving countries as opposed to the living countries, where you're creating jobs. For every 10 jobs you create, people are flocking all the way from Taxi and all the to come to this new heaven that is met, and that is why there's a problem. You may have seen Home Affairs is also trying to tighten on the regulation. We are part of the Immigration Board. We are part of those regulations and we stand by them. But we are also raising the flag because people say, you are tightening the laws. Most of you may have traveled to the U.S. and all that. You feel 17 pages just to land, not easy to go and stay. And you overstay for a day, they will eject you quickly. But here, we have those problems. We are beginning to lose fight in the hospitality industry, in the domestic, in the security industry, in the farming industry. Because the amount of undocumented workers is amazing. When you arrange to, conduct inspections, in some cases, AgriSA, the bilateral agreement we have is that make an appointment. But when you make appointment, the farmers are cheap, and then when you get there, those people are gone. When you come, you go out, they are brought back or put in some of the farmers. When you raid those farms, you get dog fed at you, and you are accused of having to steal because you didn't make an appointment. Sometimes you get police to assist. We win, we deal with two or three. We get people arrested, they go to Lindela. But at the same time, you face a similar problem around those workers not having been paid in line with the minimum requirements that you have. So you then have to deal with the repayment of money owed. You also have to have a situation where Home Affairs has to keep those people in centers like Lindela, and once they are paid, they go back. The sooner they go back, they are back the next day. So it's a cycle that we are all having to deal with. Plans around strikes. This is a big issue. You may know that we put the Labour Relations Act in Parliament, which had a strike provision, and those sections were removed. And basically, it required people to ballot. It required certain processes to be followed. However, we're sitting in the country with unionization at around 30%. That is COSATU, FEDUSA, NATU, and independent unions like Solidarity and so on combined. 70% is not anywhere in the union. Now, you can imagine you're dealing with a small percentage. Now, and the strikes, wild tech strikes in some cases happen in unionized sectors, whereas unionized sectors still have problems. I think all of us know the AMCU story and so on. So, currently the issue is how do you balance the constitutional right to strike and how people go about striking and the collective bargaining system. And the president established a working group which we are part of, and on the 24th, as part of trying to reach agreement with taking the process forward. UIF claims 46. Normally, Honorable Chairperson, is that money paid to UI because of the contribution of employer-employee. As person, if they are children and a marriage certificate, normally it's not a problem because they were able to sort out the problem. The problem arises where there is no children and no marriage. And a person who is intending to claim does not have the executor's estate. Where people have an executor's estate, we're bound to pay those people money. And in more cases, our problem is where those documents don't exist, and that's why we have been working with various people to assist them to follow the process, because you pay this one and the other one comes and says, no, I'm the bad. Now, how do you deal with this situation? Legally, you cannot, and that's where the problem lies. The compensation fund turnaround, let me agree that the problems in the compensation fund need to be categorized before we simply say the institution is not working. Currently in the country, the compensation fund is the biggest medical aid, more than anyone. Secondly, the compensation fund is the license holder for Hand Mutual Association and for the federated industries, especially the construction. Rand Mutual caters for mining and metal. Now, in terms of anybody else, including public service, those outside the state health forces, we pay for medical aid, we pay for injuries, and so on. Now, if you compare the road accident fund, which is more than 100 billion rand in the red, UI and compensation fund, despite the problems we have, will result in excess of 24 billion rand. The problem, like I said, has been in the syndicates that inflate medical costs, that inflate treatments, that are working with some of our people and all that. And there are also agencies like Comsol and others that play different roles in the process. That is why recently we have launched a campaign where people claim, because we want to make sure that the people who get injured are the ultimate beneficiaries, and you pay, working with the Department of Home Affairs and Health, the rates that are determined so that people don't inflate rates. And when people submit claims that are in line with the Department of Health, that is why we have launched a campaign that is online so that we can speed up the process. The reason why people don't like it is because we are eliminating these little people who are adding fat in the process, and in the process diverting all the funds, billing us twice and so on. And obviously, we are bound to get negative publicity because by catching or hitting them where it hurts the most. And unless you do it, the compensation fund will continue to bleed. There are problems. We have been on manual systems. We have got big warehouses in Watley. But we tend to eliminate the paper process. And I think a lot of syndicates have been targeting us because they knew that our systems are not well established to deal with that. MOUs with veterans, in the main, we don't have that one as of now, but we are engaging the military veterans and the seekers. We had MOUs as the Department of Labor when we had the seeker for the defense, where we used to channel a lot of money to the retraining of all the veterans, irrespective of the previous military regiment or whatever that they participated in for the training and so on. And currently, they are working with us to look at our model of shelter employment factories that we're calling Protective Employment Enterprises in terms of the new Employment Services Act, to look at how best they can turn the previous military bases that exist in Mahikeng, the war, former war that is in Polokwane, military bases that are in, we have visited them, in the Rembe district and so on, into training entities, because currently the kind of forces that we have is aging very fast, and we envisage a situation where there will be quite a lot of people that will be exiting the system as they go back to contractual arrangement, where you join an army on for instance, a 7-year contract or 8-year instead of the current permanent, because the minute people age, you can't send them to combat missions, DRC, and so on, and then we have to find the exit strategy. So we are working with them on a model that they can adapt. But I think the challenge on that one, on the chairperson, has been the preparedness of the various government departments, and that is what we also can experience, including parliament, ministerial, MP villages, to be able to source products that are manufactured in those entities. Because it doesn't matter, we manufacture a lot of furniture in this sector, including uniform and all that, but if police and others are going to buy uniforms from other sources and they don't procure from those centers at a very discounted price, our efforts are not going to go anywhere. So we will appeal to you, to ourselves, to also influence the procurement processes, because in the process, like eliminating the standard programs and so on, and creating jobs and making sure that those veterans, people with disabilities, young people, are working in government-established entities that eliminate the middle people that charge an extra rate in sales and so on. I think maybe it's a question that I'm going
to... Maybe I have to ask you to stop there. What might have been made, please, you can supplement it in a written form that will, you know, look into whatever is there, including the quarterly, you know, plan of your execution of your work. Honourable members, it is unfortunate that the time does not permit us to continue on the engagement. I'm aware that you might have you know, other follow-ups and other discussions that you wanted to engage them, but unfortunately time does not permit us. We thought perhaps past 11 would stop, but it would because he was still, you know, elaborating on the issues that you asked him to do. So please bear with me. It is not the nature of myself, but it's the nature of time. Unfortunately, time does not respect anyone. When it is just collapsing, get lost. Whether you like it or not, you might have, you know, some power somewhere in the corridors of the planet, but not over time. Time will continue to run as it's supposed to. And thank you for giving us the information, and would continue to work with yourself on the matters that you have raised, and we'll utilize the information to play our oversight on ourselves as you execute your work. Honorable leader, is that the same message that you cannot live with?
Chairperson, not strangeness, but I don't agree with you, Chairperson, that because of time we just need to stop. We can arrange another time because we still have other issues and we need questions and we need clarity on those questions in order to do our oversight work.
I don't have covered that side, the Honorable Villiers. I want to
Chairperson, I totally agree with you.
They will do some additional information on
that. I'm not,
we will continue to engage them on the information they've given to us. Can we then, because we have put a department out that they've been here for almost an hour now. So we need to be responsible. We cannot be seen, you know, doing things as if time is not us, we have to come at 11 o'clock.
We will plan
as a committee and then we'll then see how do we then make a follow up. Thank you very much. You are at liberty to go and do other responsibilities. We can have 5 minutes come for the come on. I'm going to go to the next one.
Good morning, the person and honorable members. My name is Gama Kunin Chenga. I'm the CEO, CFO of the Department of Women.
Good morning, the person. My name is Wisha Mane from the Ministry of Interpretation of Women.
Good morning, and honorable members. Good morning. I'm Dan Sambamba, the PLO for the Ministry.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Nikki Sikil Singapi. I'm the acting DCC, Women Empowerment and Gender Equality.
Good morning, Chairperson, and honorable members. My name is Idan Sikil Singapi. I'm the director of the CCP.
Honorable members, can you let them know who are you?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jordan Kalakis. I'm a permanent delegate from the Free Deck.
Yeah,
good afternoon. My name is Morgan Sidney. I'm from Missouri, from KDRL.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. The members from the department. My name is Louis Mande from the City of Choice, City of Lawrenceville, KZN, and I am delegate.
Dumela, Lina Lata, Kitabu from Mukwili, Kitabu Kuni Kirima.
Good morning, my name is Dumisane Kingi. I'm an advocate from the Western Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. And good morning, too. My name is Moses Peter Sulanga from Waranga, I'm an advocate. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair. Raj Jules, Jose. Thank you very much. My name is Tamara Otelegan. I'm an acting chairperson, the chairperson of the committee in disposal. We are now without waste of time, allow you an opportunity to take us through. Now, of course, we are with our supporting staff next to us and behind us. Thank you very much. Over to you, Gigi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, we got an invitation from the select committee to brief the committee on the status of women unemployment in South Africa and also our annual performance plan to deal with challenges facing women employment. Chair, we also, in the invitation, we were asked to also deal with the youth unemployment and also indicate what we have in our plan to deal with the challenges facing youth unemployment. I would like to advise the committee that when the President announced his cabinet on the 25th of May, he established a ministry in the presidency responsible for women. The youth sector, honorable members, is also dealt with in the presidency, but with under a different minister. So it is under Minister Khadebe in the presidency. It's part of Minister Khadebe's portfolio, including planning, monitoring, and evaluation. So therefore, we would not be able to respond to the committee's request to deal with issues of youth unemployment. Chairperson, as I indicated, when the president announced the cabinet on the 25th of May, he indicated that the functions of the support of people's disabilities and children will be transferred to the Department of Social Development. As honorable members would know that the department previously in the fourth administration was established as the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. So we had the three sectors and the three portfolios that we were responsible for. However, in the fifth administration, the president has transferred the functions of children and people's disabilities to the Department of Social Development and created a ministry for women, which would be in the presidency, headed by Minister Haban. He said that then pronounced president that as the women's minister, we would champion the achievement of women's socioeconomic empowerment and women's rights. So our mandate is to champion the achievement of women's socioeconomic empowerment and women's rights. And then subsequently, the Department of Women, because the announcement announced the minister, and then the Department of Women were proclaimed by President on the 8th of July. Because then we had three portfolios and three sectors actually in the mandate of the previous department, and now we were established to focus only on women's economic empowerment. In the new department, then we had to embark on a strategic approach or revision to say, what is it, how are we going then to deliver on the mandate as we were given by the president. So we had then to go and review our strategic approach. Our understanding of the mandate then is that we are entrusted with the responsibility to lead, to coordinate, and to oversee the transformation agenda on women's socioeconomic empowerment, their rights and equality. So we see ourselves as leading, coordinating, and overseeing that transformation agenda. And we appreciate the fact that we have been located in the presidency so that we are able to conduct this important oversight role that we have been mandated by the Honorable President to champion. When then we sat down, the Chair and Honorable Members, to look at how then we see ourselves delivering this mandate, we had a vision at the end that when women have been socioeconomically empowered and their rights are promoted, we would have in South Africa a just, non-racial, non-sexist, and prosperous society where everybody's potential is realized equitably. So that we have all South African citizens, men and women, having their potential realized. And therefore, it is our mission to accelerate the socioeconomic transformation for women empowerment. That's how we see ourselves. That's how we see ourselves delivering on this mandate that has been given by the President. Honorable Deputy, we, as I said, we appreciate the fact that the President has put us in his within his office, and therefore we take it that the President is saying, in this administration, I would like you to assist me as the President of the country to ensure that women are socioeconomically empowered. So if then we look at economic empowerment of women, what is it that is in the 20th year of democracy, when we look at the plight of women, what are the issues that we're going to be looking at that we identify in those areas that we had, for lack of a better word, the economic empowerment of women? We have identified those five, which is not conclusive, Honorable Professor, that women lack access to opportunities. That is an inhibiting factor for women's economic empowerment. That access to opportunities. Women are underrepresented. Though women constitute 52% of the population in the country, if you look at, I'm not going to say certain look at your as a community, but if you look at the representation of women, you find that there is a lot of underrepresentation of women. So we need to address that. The issue of underdevelopment is also another area. Women, when you look at the development state of citizens in the country, they form, although they are majority in terms of citizens, but they also form the major part of citizens that are underdeveloped. So issue of inequality services, but also the issue of unemployment inhibits women's economic empowerment. When it comes to social empowerment, the challenge of poverty, we would say that poverty has got more of a feminine or a female face, because women are the ones that bear the burden of raising their families under those difficult circumstances of facing inequality and facing unemployment. The issue of HIV and AIDS, in terms of people that are tested and people that know their status, you find that the majority of people that have the effect of HIV is both being affected but also looking after their families who are affected with HIV. It's a burden that is carried mainly by women. But also the issue of abuse and gender-based violence. So this thing is, you would know in honor of members that from the 25th of November to the 10th of December, in South Africa, we also subscribe to the 16 days of activism on no violence against women, which is a UN campaign. When we adopted it in South Africa in 1998, we also added children. They know violence against women and children. And we are going to, we are working now towards also preparing for that period of raising awareness in South Africa around the issue of gender-based violence, especially violence against women and children. And this year we would like to focus on prevention of violence against women and children. Another area that when we look at that affects and impedes women from being socially empowered. But also the issue of culture and religion. The person you would know, I know that you know this because you are involved in the issues of traditional leaders, that some practices attempt harmful practices, but when you engage the cultures themselves, the intention when they if they use for example Kutwala as an example, when the culture is not harmful in terms of its original nature, because it is argued that the party would agree and then there would be Ukutwala. But now if you get an older man, twilight for the lack of a better word, a young 12-year-old who does not have a say, then it becomes a harmful cultural practice. So that the issue is then that we say that we also need to be aware of it as a society and also try to ensure that they are eliminated in terms of our traditions. Also the issue of religion, especially to some of our religious affiliations, where you find that women do not get a full status, they will remain minors. So what we are saying there for the person is, those are issues that when we're looking at our strategic approach, and we're saying these are the issues that need to be addressed if we are going to have women in the country socioeconomically empowered. With regard to the status of unemployment in South Africa, Chair and Honourable Members, we get the information from ZSA. As Honourable Chair is aware, ZSA is a body, an institution in the country that is endowed with the responsibility to ensure that they look at a statistical trend in terms of various information. So when we look at the unemployment rate, which they have studied, you find that if you look at those graphs, the red line is men, unemployment, rate of unemployment of men, the green line is the average South African unemployment generally, and the blue line is the unemployment of women. Just looking at the graph, you can see that women, the rate of unemployment of women in South Africa is higher, far higher than that of men, but also even above average in terms of South Africa. If you will not be able to indicate in what sectors, in what areas, that ZSA would definitely be able to elaborate better in terms of this information. We drew it from the documents and the studies that were conducted by South Africa. For the period April to June 2014, for instance, if you look at the graph is from 2008 to 2014. If you look at just the first quarter, April to June 2014, the unemployment rate of women remains higher than that of men, that indicated as well as than the national average, and it has been persistent in terms of the high rate of unemployment for more than 5 years in terms of women. And also in just one quarter, 2014, April to June, the number of unemployed people increased by 87,000, but the largest increase in unemployment were observed among men when compared to men. So So it indicates therefore that women are very vulnerable and they face that challenge of unemployment, which lends to them not being economically empowered. However, as a country, we do have legislation that is there to assist, to enable women to also participate actively as full citizens across all spectra of life in terms of the Bill of Rights, the right to employment. You do have the Employment Equity Act that enjoins companies to make sure that there's parity in terms of women employment within their respective sectors. The Act is there. I think currently 50%, that would be women, and we were looking at having a 50% rate, but currently I think the Employment Equity Act is looking at 30%. Also the Project Economic Empowerment Act there has been promulgated. The Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, which is called PECUDA, is also there. So the government has put some legislation that is going to facilitate and enable the participation of women economically. I think what we need to do, we have not done at this stage, but some of the things that we're going to do is to say, what is it there? If we have got these pieces of legislation, what is it that lends women to remain at the periphery when it comes to economic empowerment? So what then we are going to do as the department is that we are going to look at the policy that is there, we're going to look at the legislation that is there, analyze and identify gaps. Where are the gaps? What is it that is inhibiting women from advancing both economically and socially? But also we are going to make sure that we and I think the person who would assist us in respective provinces to make sure that women know about this piece of legislation. They know about what is going to advance them. Sometimes you find that not much information has been disseminated. And when, for instance, when it comes to social empowerment and I've spoken to gender-based violence, where this piece of legislation that is there to assist women, the Domestic Violence Act, the Sexual Offences Act, and all those other pieces of legislation, we would then work with the respective departments that is the custodian of that piece of legislation to say, go out and make sure that women know about these things. And would also, as I said, analyze to say, if there is this legislation, what is it? Why do women find themselves continuously, for instance, in this case, suffer gender-based violence when there is a Domestic Violence Act that is there to support them and protect them? Then what we will do then is also look at government programs and monitor the impact of government programs. There's a lot of initiatives of government that we know in terms of the economic sector. You have your extractive industries, your mining industries, the agricultural sector, with a whole range of programs that are there to improve the economy of the country. We need to analyze the impact of those programs and why are those programs or what is it that is stopping women from accessing those programs and benefiting from those programs. So a lot of work will be done in terms of researching and look at the trends so that we can input and feedback. In August, when we were celebrating the Women's Month, on the 9th of August, the President announced that he, when we meet in August 2015, he would like a status report on the women's empowerment. So it is our responsibility then to do all this so that we can go and present to the President and say, here is the status of women empowerment in the country. We have been given that money to citizen by President and we would like to do it and deliver on that by August 2015. So that's indicated, Chair, we will do some policy analysis so that we have innovation plans. Come up with reports, having analyzed, for instance, we look at the mining charter, what does the mining charter say about women? Analyze those and look at where they are gaps, what are the interventions that need to take place. We want to ensure that women are so economically empowered so that we've got better quality of life for women, which impacts on the family life. Everything, I'm sure you'd agree with me that they say you empower a woman, you empower a nation. The women have got that nurturing being born with them. Because, you know, we have for 9 months something in and then we give you a big baby at the end of that. So that's the nature of women. So we would do that, and also, as I said, we would focus on research work so that we come up with evidence-based information to inform the planning and decision-making. So that's what we see Chairperson as our role, monitoring and evaluation, also, as I said, outreach, going out there, raising awareness, increase access to information so that women are aware and opportunities that are there for them to take charge of and use, and also knowledge management. We'd like to be able to say as a department, if you need information on women, you are able to push a button and go to this hub that will develop as information hub that will develop as department, so that there's access of information. We become a depository on information relating to women's empowerment. There's a lot of research that is done throughout the country that we would like to centralize the accessibility of that information, both for the benefit of people who continue to research and those who are working on the ground with these women. In terms of the question, in terms of what have we been doing before, when we were seeing women, children, and people with disabilities, we had a program that we still continue with, we would like to continue with, where we were encouraging young women to take part in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math, exposing them to opportunities, taking them from, I think, grade 10, at school, taking them through, expose and link them with some companies and other government institutions, so that we check their appetite towards these fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. And then now that program has got what we call the technical alumni, which means that they graduate from high school, and then we take them through, we train with them as they go through their tertiary education. The other program that we had initiated, Chairperson, is gender resources budgeting, which we would like to the departments and the private sectors to use so that they budget for women empowerment. They must tell us how much in their budget is there for women, what is it used for, and how it reaches women. And we need that by so doing, by encouraging and directing the department to look at how responsive gender is their budgeting process, who is able to assist in terms of empowerment of women. Chair, in conclusion, we would appreciate if the select committee can assist us so that that gender responsive budgeting imperative are within the deliverables of all the municipalities. We already started going to municipalities. I think in the presentation we can talk more on that, but we already started engaging some municipalities and some provinces to encourage them to use this tool that will assist them to when they implement their programs, when they design their programs, when they allocate budgets, they have the women empowerment at the back of their minds. But also, the select committee could also assist us to with the oversight function on other departments in terms of what their programs are doing and how their programs are assisting women in achieving socio-economic empowerment. Chairperson, I think, in a nutshell, that's the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There you are, honorable members. You can engage with the presentation as was presented to us. You will show your desire to speak by raising your hand. Any honorable Mukwele, honorable Klasa, honorable Julia.
Thank you, Chairperson. thank you very much, DG. I just want to check with you what is it that you are doing at the department for Marikana widows. Hence, you know that the government has the responsibility to make sure that those 34 widows are taken care of.
what is the department doing to that effect? And I'm happy that the minister that is now leading this department was the minister of minerals when the incident of that of Marikana happened. Another issue that I need to discuss with you, I hear that you probably need assistance from the select committee, but as the department, I understand that you have the obligation or the responsibility to do your own monitoring in terms of various departments and various sectors as to comply to legislation. From where I'm sitting, I want to check with you whether you have a mechanism that you are using, and how do you measure that mechanism? I know that you are a new department, but you have been there from the House of Parliament. Though the name has changed, but the responsibility has not changed that much. Do you have a measurable mechanism to make sure that all the departments, all the sectors comply with legislation in terms of women representation? You can see there are women in our committee that we are outnumbered by male figures, and we statistically women are more than men. So it clearly shows that even at the level where legislation is developed, we seek to undermine the representation of women. And also your participation in terms of training. I heard you saying you make sure that the municipalities comply, blah blah blah. But what is it that your department is doing in ensuring that women are empowered, and the time frame? How do you measure whatever you have put into vis-a-vis your outcome?
What pockets do we have in terms of women in my sector? The other question will be at 5:12, yeah? You, in terms of your strategic approach, what are the indicators and measures targets to measure the achievement of the outcome specified on 5:12 and 14? The socio-economic empowerment. The question two will be, how is the department working with other departments to address the challenges faced by the women? So, we noted on slide 7, HIV, AIDS, adult and abuse and gender-based violence, culture and religion.
Question 3, we'll move over this.
The creation of the new department resulted in moving children's rights and the rights of people with disability to the Department of Social Development. Has this happened? If, what impact will it have on the budget of the new department? The next one will be, you mentioned the 15 days of activism last year. One of the flagship projects of the department was the National Council on Gender-Based Violence. Hey, what is the status and budget of this council? To be, how does it fit in the department?
Honorable Julia.
No reason.
Thank you, Gigi. Yeah, I think you should appreciate this ministry because it's high time that we look at the rights of women in this country. You mentioned on slide 15, in addressing unemployment, that you have a gender-responsive budgeting initiative too. Can I request to see that too? Because if you go further to say that we can also help you as a committee, so if we have that too, and on top of that, if this ministry can report to the select committee on an annual basis in terms of the other department's gender-responsive budgeting initiative on their budget, it will actually help us. I'd like to go further in terms of the status quo. Do you have this information for us in terms of this year's budget so that we can now have a look at it and maybe start with our oversight to work and not wait until next year to do oversight? Yeah, just an analysis of the current situation, what is actually happening now. Development of women through UJ cannot be separated from the girl child in our society. I want to know this, what are you doing as a department to develop the girl child, because that girl will most definitely become a woman in a few years' time. So we need to start there, otherwise we're stopping the problem at the end, and we're not actually trying to prevent the problem. What are we doing in terms of that one? Just want to check. Yes, and then you also mentioned that on slide 15 through gender responsive budgeting initiative 2, the department will require departments and private sector to ensure that they budget. How do you do it? Are they compelled to do it? Are you compelling them to do it? What's the stance of the private sector in this regard? Do you have problems in terms of private sector and also government departments? Thank you.
Thank you very much. It looks like all your questions have been addressed. Just to share, because the web of your ministry, naturally, it cuts across all departments. There are departments that have committed themselves in terms of the strategic, medium-term strategic plan. One is about the 80% of employment equity plan by Department of Labor. The 1% of municipality of gender, you know, pressing budgetary by 2014-15. I'm just giving this example because when you execute your work, you have that to navigate and follow you know, the executions of those particular part of area. How do you plan to make sure, and then can you also make us to have an understanding as to how far are those, you know, commitments by departments in terms of the medium term strategy plan that I've made? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shabri. When we started chair, I requested with your permission that my colleagues introduce themselves. It's an opportunity for them now to also get the honorable members to hear and so that I also justify why I had to pay for the flight.
I'm
so
happy to do that. I must also indicate that we have got 20 minutes.
Okay. No, thank you, Jefferson. I appreciate that. Jefferson, some of the groups here are specializing in some of the areas that we asked here. So I will ask them to assist in responding. Honourable member asked for information on the progress of women in mining, and I think as Chairperson indicated, we are monitoring the other government departments, but also as parliamentarians, Chairperson, you know, for all the experience, you can call upon the Department of Mineral Resources to give you a report on, status report on women in mining. I'm not saying we won't answer the question, but we won't be able to have the specifics. But what I know is that we've got only one woman who owns the mine in South Africa. I think only one woman who full mine owner in South Africa. And that there is a mining charter that was concluded. It stipulates some percentages of mine in terms of mines. I think there's 10% that I'm not sure. Okay. Thank you, Honourable. So there is that charter that the Department of Mineral Resources should ensure that it is implemented so that we are able to have women progressing as far as the mining sector is concerned. Let me ask the CFO to talk to the NMOS process in terms of transferring of functions from the Department of Women to the Department of Social Development and the budget of the new department. I think the CFO will assist there. And also, the acting secretary will talk on to the gender responsive budgeting that has been asked. And then other colleagues will come in and assist because they've put us in terms of enemy tools, what are we doing. But I will also talk to some of the questions. If I can hand over to Chairperson, CFO, and then...
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. The transfer of functions of CRR and RTD has reduced our budget, as it is legislation that when functions are transferred, then the funds have to follow. So our budget, I think it has reduced by plus minus 26 million for the transfer of those functions and the bit of support staff that had to go and assist in the core business for the transfer of the funding. The actual transfer of funds will happen after the adjusted budget, after the AEME. Then that's when then the budget of the department will just reflect the two programs that are remaining for women. Thank you.
I'm going to respond to the question on the gender response budgeting. And I think perhaps what's important about gender response budgeting is the principle. The Parliament was quite critical starting back in 1995 ensuring the oversight of that. However, later on, the Ministry of Finance also became quite instrumental in doing that. What maybe let me just do with the private sector. We are in the process of developing a South African-based framework. Presented to Cabinet in 2014 February, and Cabinet had indicated that we need to develop a gender-responsive vaccine framework. The current framework that exists are Australian, Canadian, and others, and not necessarily South African. However, some of the expertise in gender-responsive vaccine lie in South Africa through the Delivery Center. And so we have expertise in South Africa to develop that framework, and that's what we're going to be working on as part of our work in the next 6 months as we look to finish this year. Once that is developed, we're working with the Department with the Treasury and the DCMB to ensure that we're not introducing a separate tool, but rather integrating the measures of response budgeting within the Treasury requirements and within the Department of Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation. That way, that becomes what we then say is a mainstream approach in ensuring responsive budgeting. The current report that is available, on how departments are doing is actually an analysis that was done for 2012-13 on the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Industry, Department of Energy, and the Department of Health.
And what that did show was that there are some pockets of good practice in terms of gender responsibility, but departments by and large are not using a responsive budgeting principle. Essentially what it says is that how much have you budgeted for the empowerment of women, of young girls, of people with disabilities, or any of the vulnerable, how much have you budgeted? Then departments need to indicate how much their budget is. Then we need to monitor how much of that budget was used for the empowerment of women. Of the money that was used, how many women were empowered? Of the women that were empowered, how much of that money actually reached women? So it's important that you actually find the impact in terms of women and young women with disabilities for that matter. So that's really what we're looking for. And so when we do the framework, that's what we're going to be producing. In the medium-term strategic framework, the responsibility currently lies with COXA, and it is led by COXA to ensure, and our department is working with COXA to support the piloting of gender responsive budgeting. We started with the project in Metsimaholo municipality to look at their IDPs, their budget, and to see how they're budgeting. And they've agreed through the executive, we've actually met with them, and they've agreed to allow us to access them. Because it's quite a process, and people you have to buy in for them to allow you access to their IDPs and to their finances. So they have agreed. And that process is underway, and we're doing that in partnership with UN Women. We'll do the same in the Eastern Cape. Nala municipality was not able to meet with us, but we are in the process of ensuring that we meet with them so that those results begin to inform COPTA and, of course, committees on what is required and what where the gaps are. But perhaps that also indicates the committee that the Fiscal and Financial Committee had also conducted a study on certain municipalities on gender responsive budgeting specifically. And so we're building on that. So right now in South Africa, that film-based research specifically is on one that the study department is run on the four departments in partnership with the Foundation, and then the one that has been done by SSC and the piloting that we've done. So that is the new work that is happening and currently available in the country. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable members have asked a question about the girl child, you know, or a development of the girl child. And I think it's quite true and important that we start from developing the girl child from the cradle to the grave. Because we also find that in terms of the Millennium Development Goal 3, where we have to ensure that girls, children access education. As a country, we are reporting that we have improved, but more girl learners attending school. But then what happens is that they finish the school age and they go to tertiary, and you find young women at tertiary, but then what happens to them when you don't do the productivity? So that's something that we still need to do. And I know that the Department of Higher Education has done a study in terms of the fields of study that women take when they go to the students of higher learning. But also we need to take it further to say after, post. I don't know whether it's the child's bearing age or women then go. I don't know. We have not looked at the study that says why it is that stop women. Why don't we find women outside post tertiary education? But also in terms of representation of women, that Honourable Member asked, the political will is there, and it was there since 1994. And I think we are hailed as South Africa in terms of the number of representation of women in Parliament. South Africa has taken a progressive approach. Remember, we had 30%, and now we've got 50% as a principle. And we are in the 40%, 40%, 40-something in terms of Parliament, in terms of cabinet, but also when it comes to women in senior management positions in government, we also see that we are in the 50-something percentage is there, but also we look that you see a lot of women in the lower levels of the senior management. When you go to the higher levels of the senior management, again, you don't see a lot of women there. So we still have a lot of ground to cover there. But we also, cabinet has also said that in the performance assessment of the director general, it should be as one of their deliverables, to ensure that they have 50% of women in their senior management positions within their department. So there's a lot of ground that is being covered in terms of ensuring women's representation. But where we are lacking behind as a country, because we do report
to even the international conventions that we've signed around women empowerment. The private sector is looking behind. We've got very few women who are CEOs, we've got very few men who are in the director position, as far as the private sector is concerned. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to encourage, to incentivize government, private sector to ensure that women take part in decision-making positions. Chairperson, I know that UCTV Zone has just come back from Ethiopia, where we were presenting a report on how we have done as a country in terms of compliance with one of the instruments on children's rights. And I think he was telling me a beautiful story about how out of the young women, a young girl, that is representing the country and responding to the experts, and I don't know if you want to just give a snippet of that, which indicates how we are doing as a country in terms of the children that we empower the children.
Thank you, Chen. Thank you. I think it's about all of the efforts that are done in allowing the participation of girls or girl child in making sure that they participate in the economy of the country ultimately, and that we were looking at the African child for children, and that the issue here was that we were providing South Africa the status of development with regards and participation with regards to children in South Africa. And that part of that was to allow us to give opportunity to children so that they can show their or demonstrate their voices with regards to how they see South Africa giving them opportunity to participate in the well-being of the country. So this is what the Director General was asking me to explain, and that we have gone there with a young girl from Northwest, and another one from Gauteng, and a young disabled boy from Gauteng also, in terms of school for disabled, and were there to explain their experiences in terms of their participation in South Africa, and that was really encouraging, because we were teamed with Kenya, with Ethiopia, and with Mozambique in terms of the quality of experts allowing us to present our cases with regards to development of children in our country.
Basically, the council of the structure is a separate issue which we are still looking at so that we can be able to make proposals to cabinet. However, the government continues to deal with issues of gender-based funding as it's a cross-cutting issue. And as Didi was articulating the situational analysis, she highlighted also some of the social practices that eventually a term on the rights of women. So the government has not necessarily stopped working on gender-based violence. It's still there in our project, as you also noted that we are preparing for the 3 days of activism against abuse on women and children. And then with regards to the monitoring tool, we are working with the department, the DPME, the Department for Monitoring and Evaluation, because they are also monitoring government, but we then wanted to make sure that we don't have respondent fatigue in terms of us having our own instrument that measures government and then also doing the same thing. So we've been instructed then to work with them. So in terms of an actual tool for monitoring how government is doing, we are still working with DPME. However, the other aspect of monitoring and evaluation also related to us looking at how has South Africa performed against the international instruments that we have been signatory to, and in that respect we have been talking to the UN agencies. So that still continues to happen. And with regards to the indicators that have been prioritize with regards to social empowerment of women, especially as RNCG was articulating our mandate to say it's policy and monitoring and evaluation and research, then when we take it to the target level, we then say the indicators that we prioritize is the number of reports on policy analysis, for instance. So in a year, we then prioritize at least 4 reports, so our target would be 4. And then that also goes to interventions that we then come up with, and we'll have a report on interventions that we think should be made. So the indicator there would be the number of indicators that have been prioritized.
Chairperson, that's also to wrap up to say that we also work closely with other government departments in terms of what the Honourable Member was asking, how we're going to work on TV, HIV and AIDS. For instance, as we are planning for the 16 days of activism campaign, we've got strong ties that we are establishing with the Department of Health, because as many of us know, the 3rd of December is the HIV and AIDS Day, so and it falls within the 16 days. We're working closely with the Department of Social Development. The 3rd of December is the National Day of Persons with Disabilities, so it falls within that. We're working closely with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development because the 10th of December is International Day of Human Rights. So we work in collaboration with other departments as our mandate has been renewed to say that we must monitor, we must evaluate, we must indicate what is the status and what interventions can be done by government to improve the plight of women. So I think we will be able to, as we do in this next 5 years, which has already started, we will be able to showcase how we are going to deliver on our mandate. I think the issue of women in general, especially women that are in the mining town, it needs to be addressed as a general issue in terms of how do women who are in those mining towns, and some of them that were thriving before and are no longer thriving now. I think COCTA is also looking at that, but how do we, as government, look at those areas in the country? And I think also the Department of Social Development is also working closely in terms of specifically addressing the plight of the widows in Marikana. But I would like to say, Honourable Chairperson and members, we have to look holistically at the country. What are we doing around those areas, especially the mining towns? How do we ensure that people in those areas from whom there has been some benefit in terms of extractive industries, how do those industries plow back to improve the plight of those communities that have emerged in those areas? Thank you.
Thank you very much. So this brings us to the end of our engagement with the department. And thank you, Didi and your team, for coming and taking us through the request that, this question. We will keep on, working very closely on our oversight to check how far you are in terms of executing what you presented. You are active, I think, so. Honourable members, the last item on the agenda is about next week. Indeed, next week the oversight is on. All the logistics will be communicated to ourselves. What remains, and I guess it's just worrying me because the other secretariat and the with and the chair of the committee is not here. We were supposed immediately after this meeting to go into a management committee to deal with the nitty-gritties of where are we going to start and where will be ended. But I think we will still do that tomorrow as the management, and you will be informed of this. What you should block is come next week, the whole of the week you are included to be. Those logistics will be about which venue, at a particular time. So you may not be able to do your political commitments because we haven't yet said you will be at this particular area on a particular day. There's 3-4 days that will be there.
but you will be informed tomorrow. Excuse me. Come again. No, it's good because you are informing the management. They will look at it. If there is red in the oversight, they will decide on that. So it's not ready to decide. I think as you will be given that information, you will also be picked up by the research information about the areas that we are going to be. Honorable,
the meeting is not over, honorable members. It's telling those people that it's the same this information trip. It's also the same as regular updates. I think on a daily basis on the India
on that
India because we are not sure and the time is short, we need to prepare for this. Just in case there's less information on it.
Okay. Hopefully it was also going to be part of the discussion. So you'll also be informed. Thank you very much, the meeting is thank you.
Someone name you always.
Thank you. Oh, this one. No. Oh, so I'm not. Come here. Oh.